This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Healthcare premiums are going way up, Democrat Hakeem Jeffries tells ABC's This Week, unless Congress reverses healthcare cuts enacted this past summer.
We're talking about the largest cut to Medicaid in American history. Hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health centers are closing all across America because of what Republicans have done with their one big ugly bill.
That's the issue at the crux of the federal shutdown, which is now 3 weeks old. Democrats are withholding support for a short-term spending bill unless the health care issue is resolved. Republicans say they might discuss health care, but only after the government reopens. Hamas now says they've located the body of another Israeli hostage and are ready to transfer those remains once field conditions allow. And in France, authorities are now searching for a group of thieves who stole the country's crown jewels from the Louvre this morning. The robbers posed as construction workers and escaped on motorcycles, authorities say. This is ABC News. This weekend saw what could be one of the largest protests in U.S. history, as millions attended No Kings demonstrations protesting the Trump administration's policies.
From New York to Los Angeles, from Chicago to Austin, 2,600 events nationwide. And organizers of this weekend's No Kings protests say some 7 million people protested coast to coast. If that number turns out to be correct, the Crowd Counting Consortium, a joint project of University of Connecticut and Harvard, say it would mean Saturday saw the largest turnout for a one-day protest in U.S. history, unless you count the first Earth Day in 1970 as a protest. The CCC will be spending the next few weeks compiling reports to verify the count. Dave Packer, ABC News.
And authorities in Pennsylvania now say the human remains that were found in a shallow grave on the grounds of an abandoned school are believed to be Kata Scott, a Philadelphia woman who's been missing for 2 weeks. I'm Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It should not be a partisan question as to how the National Guard is being deployed. That should be extremely concerning to Republicans of good faith right alongside Democrats. If you scrub it of the partisanship, the facts are not disputable. You have flouting of court orders and a political use of the National Guard, two things which no American should ever be okay with.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. As the climate shifts, so does the science behind growing cranberries. Reporter Melissa Kay has more.
Staff at the Wisconsin Cranberry Research Station are working to ensure the future of the state's signature fruit by studying how cranberries can tolerate extreme temperatures and finding ways to extend the harvest season to reduce labor and equipment demands.
The inability to change in a changing environment is the textbook definition of extinction.
That's Grant Hawley, the executive director of the nonprofit Wisconsin Cranberry Growers Association. He said Wisconsin growers know what to do when change happens slowly.
When you're looking at fast changes, you need to know the whys. And that's where our researchers come into play.
They're able to look at changes happening at a molecular level and see how the cranberries are being affected and also the symbiotic relationship that plants have with other organisms in the ground.
They're seeing how that bacteria inside of the soil is helping with nitrogen uptake. They're making sure that the fungus in the ground is helping us with water uptake.
Gabby Myers is the Research and Education Manager for the Wisconsin Cranberry Research and Education Foundation. She coordinates efforts from researchers across the state.
They're trying to create better cranberries, so maybe they're sweeter, firmer. So all different sorts of traits that they're trying to breed for, we provide a space for them to have those plots established.
Hybrid cranberry varieties are helping farmers diversify their marshes, producing more fruit on less land, and spreading out the harvest season.
They're trying to be able to make it to where harvest doesn't all happen in the same 2 weeks, because that's where you need extra equipment, you need extra people. It's just a terrible time if you have to do that.
Harvest season now starts as early as September and can run through October or later, depending on the year.
Reporter Melissa Kay. For Civic Media News, I'm Sholly Pittman. More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
We bring the excitement to you from wherever the Milwaukee Brewers are playing on WRCE FM 107.7 AM 1450 in Richland Center.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Increasing sunshine throughout the day, but breezy and much colder. Highs only in the upper 50s. For tonight, mostly clear and crisp. Areas of frost possible late, lows in the mid 30s. An isolated shower can't be ruled out Monday afternoon. Highs in the mid 60s. Current temperature is 54.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Amy Gaither, director of a new show at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Then Eric and Adam from Ask Your Mother drop by to rock the studio. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and today I have the absolute pleasure of sitting down with my friend, Dr. Pat McBride. Pat is the former Dean of Students at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, which is how I met him. But interestingly, that is not what we're talking about today. It came to my attention a couple of years ago that Pat was also the first bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, like, when the Brewers came back to Milwaukee back in 1969, and that is just the very tip of the iceberg, my friends. Pat McBride has lived Wisconsin sports history in a way that nobody else can claim, and I'm not just talking about the Brewers. His surprising and inspirational story is chronicled in his autobiography, The Luckiest Boy in the World, which is, by the way, much more than just a story about sports. So I asked him to hang out today to sprinkle his world champion good luck. He was the ball boy for the 1971 Milwaukee Bucks and the Green Bay Packers team that won the first two Super Bowls. He has mojo. And there is nobody more needed at this moment in Milwaukee Brewer history to make a little magic, share some delightful stories about Bob Uecker, and to show us all why baseball in Milwaukee is so much more than just a game. I honestly have no idea where this conversation is going to wander off to, but no matter where it ends up, it's going to be entertaining and wonderful. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Kristen. I appreciate it, Dr. Lierley. It's great to be on your show.
Oh, listen, I'm so glad you're here. And you, when I was thinking about the Brewers, so we're actually taping on the first day of the NLCS, and enthusiasm is high.
I know. Yeah. Go, crew.
Go, crew. Yeah. But yeah. You were there at the very beginning. So let's start there. How does a kid living in Wauwatosa become the first bat boy for a Major League Baseball team?
Well, you know, I was a typical struggling teenager, not sure what direction to take in life. When I opened up the Milwaukee Sentinel one morning, and there was a contest to be the first bat boy for the Brewers, 25-word essay contest. And of course, Milwaukee had lost the Braves. So I got an idea. And my idea was to write this essay about how to bring baseball back to Milwaukee. So I wrote, I would like to be a bat boy because I would be a small part in bringing baseball back to Milwaukee. I would hope the spirit I would show would be contagious.
That was exactly what you wrote. It's like a 20-word essay.
25 words right there. That was my essay. And Eddie Matthews, I didn't know this until actually recently when I was digging through my files. And Eddie Matthews was the judge of the contest, and he picked my essay out of all these essays, and I became the first bat boy for the Brewers. So I get this letter in the mail, congratulations, you're in, come on down. So next thing I know, I was picked. They moved us around a little bit the first time. So the first game I worked was an exhibition game against the Cubs. And I was picked to be in the visiting locker room that day to be the bat boy for the Cubs. And it was the 1969 Cubs.
Oh, my gosh.
Which famous team who collapsed at the end of the season, which scared me this year. And, you know, so I put on this wool uniform with a Cub on it, everything. And I get everything ready. They taught me how to be a bat boy. They how to carry the bats down and put them in the right order and the helmets and everything. And I go down there and I'm waiting with my mitt. And I'm going to tell you, the world is really different from inside a locker room and inside a dugout, because I've been a stadium rat for a long time and running around and just waiting for an opportunity to meet big leaguers. You know, I met Henry Aaron, I met Eddie Matthews and Warren Spahn and all my heroes. And all of a sudden I hear these spikes clicking down the tunnel. And I'm not kidding you. My hair still stands up on end when I think about this. And a guy sticks his head around the corner of the dugout and he said, "Hey, son, it's a great day. Let's play two." And it's Ernie Banks.
Oh, my gosh.
And he says, "Hey, son, do you want to have a catch?" And I'm playing catch with Ernie Banks. Next thing I know, County Stadium's field.
Wow.
And then fast forward, I get to, you know, work these games. And then Bud Selig gets the Brewers and I get a call to be the first bat boy, you know, with the, because I had worked really hard and I get to be a bat boy for the Brewers. He buys those Seattle Pilots. They moved to Milwaukee. And my God, it was amazing. And I'll tell you, the players, special breed of people, because they were just so grateful to be on this expansion team, you know. And interesting, a lot of people don't realize, but that 1970 Brewers team who'd been the 69 Seattle Pilots were the team that they wrote a really famous first tell-all book in baseball history called Ball Four. And it was a very fun, funny group of guys. When you work in the locker room with them, you learn a lot about them. And I got to go on a road trip with them, and I got to meet Bob Uecker.
How old were you at the time?
15.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah. I learned to swear.
I definitely want to talk about Bob Uecker because I think I read his book, Catcher in the Rye,
yeah.
W-R-Y, when I was like a 12 or 13-year-old girl, and I learned a lot.
Yeah.
But let's save Uecker for a little bit later, because I want to know, what was it like? I mean, you're a 15-year-old kid. What was the energy like in the city of Milwaukee? They'd been without a team for a little while. This team was there. Were people excited about it, or were they really still kind of mourning the Braves? Or what was your perspective?
You know, it was fascinating because there were two groups of people. There were people that just couldn't wait to see baseball again, and they came out right away. And the Brewers that first year were actually not really that bad. They were a pretty good baseball team. They had some really good pitchers. They had a few good hitters like Danny Walton and Tommy Harper. And they had a guy named Lou Krause, a really good pitcher named Marty Patton. So they were pretty good. And people started, Milwaukee's faithful to baseball, as we know. Look at right now. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I'm going tomorrow night. I'm going to see Peralta versus Ohtani.
It's going to be so good.
So anyway, but they showed up. But there was a group of people, the old faithful Braves fans, that would show up and they would make paper hats out of the newspaper. And oh, my God, they had scorecards. Those people did refuse to show up. They would not forget baseball. And I remember, I think it was in the second or third year of the Brewers, they decided Bud Selig would bring the Braves back every year for an exhibition game. And that's when I got to meet Henry Aaron, and Eddie Matthews was on the team. And it was amazing, you know, but people would kind of shun those games a little bit because it was the Braves. But Bud Selig was really clear about, you know, we're forgiving and we're moving on. But there was an old timers game. They decided to have an old timers game, and they brought back the old Braves, Joe Adcock and Warren Spahn and all Billy Bruton and all these guys. And they were in our locker room. And I was like, this is incredible, you know. And those people that hadn't forgiven, Joe Adcock was there. They showed up and they introduced the old Braves one by one. And I was looking in the stands, and there were all these elderly people dressed like they would have been for a Braves game when I was a kid. And there were thousands of them. And they were cheering, you know, louder for each one as they introduced these players, you know, Billy Bruton, Warren Spahn, you know. And apparently Joe Adcock was like the ultimate Brave. I don't know what it was. But when Joe Adcock came out and he was limping, he was from Georgia. He owned a peach farm. I'd driven by it one. And people started crying. I mean, I looked in the stands and there were people weeping. And I thought, okay, that was when it changed. And people started showing up in much greater attendance. And baseball was forgiven. And the Brewers kind of took off. And then that was, I think, the year Robin Yount showed up. And when Robin Yount showed up, by this time I was 19, and I was in the locker room. I'll never forget this. And I remember the equipment manager of the Brewers said to me, "Hey, do you have a friend that wants to work in the locker room? You know, I need another guy and everything." And I said, "Sure, I got this friend of mine. He's a really good baseball player, and his name was Rick Naples." And he eventually became the equipment manager of the Brewers for a short while. He was assistant to this guy. And he was a dead ringer for Robin Yount. There were many times Robin Yount didn't want to talk to the press. He was actually a very shy guy, still is a shy guy. And he would hide in the trainer's room, and this guy would strip down to his shirt and his baseball pants, because he was one of the ball boys on the field and stuff. And he would sit down in Yount's locker, and he pulled a Bull Durham and would answer questions just like, "Yeah, it was rough game out there. Yeah, I kind of tough time against those pitchers." And he would just do baseball quotes. And the press would not know any different. I'm not kidding you. He did it multiple times. And Yount was cracking up. But Yount was a year younger than we were.
Uh-huh.
And he would say, "Hey, where can I go to catch a beer?" And, you know, he would hang out with us and stuff. Because he was just the kid.
The kid.
You know, the kid. And he was, you know, brought up too early and all that, but he pulled it off because he was such a mellow, straightforward guy. And he, wow, man, what a human being that guy is. He's still the same.
You see him now. I went to the Bob Uecker tribute game just a couple months ago, and he was there on the field, and he started talking into his microphone, but he was holding it upside down, and it was a corded microphone. So I at first I thought, how could you not know you're holding your mic upside down? And he just started to talk, and then he looked startled, and he turned it back around, and he said, "I learned that trick from Uke." And I thought, oh, that's just perfect. But it didn't seem like the shy Robin Yount that I think we were also used to.
Two stories about Yount. Number one, in that movie called Just a Bit Outside, which I recommend everybody watch before this series, I'm telling you, it's on Amazon. It's so good. And I'm watching and I'm thinking, you know, I don't know. It's so good. And when Robin Yount cried, that was it. Robin Yount never cries. I'm just telling you, Robin Yount does not cry. That's not him. And you know what he cried about? It wasn't about losing that series, because he was really upset about that. He cried a little bit about that later in the movie, but he cried because they couldn't bring Milwaukee a World Series championship.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I was like, oh my God. That's how great a human being he is. With all the narcissists there are and the egos in sports, that's Robin Yount. And number two, when Bob Uecker died, he called Usinger Sausage and said, "Hey, I know how important you was to you guys, and I want to be your spokesperson, and I don't want anything for it. I want to just do it for Uecker." Wow. That's Robin Yount. That's the kind of person he is. Robin Yount, I'm telling you what, man, they don't make them like that guy. And the spirit of this baseball team, you know, here we are. We're one third the payroll of the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers pay more in luxury tax for their team than our payroll. And if there's ever time that David beats Goliath, this is it, man. I'm feeling the mojo, the spirit of.
I feel it too. I feel it too. It feels like 1982 plus. This team, yes. The spirit, Euchre, the whole thing. I want to get back into that after we come back from this short break. I'm talking with Dr. Pat McBride. He was the first bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. And when we come back, it's Euchre stories, what Bob Euchre means to the team and all of us, especially right now. Friends, you are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on the Civic Media app and the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The conservative majority of the U.S. Supreme Court appeared to agree October 15th with arguments that the Voting Rights Act Section 2's majority-minority voting districts conflicted with the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. A decision is expected next year. Chief Justice John Roberts signaled that the court's 2023 Milligan precedent, a very similar case, may not apply to Louisiana versus Calais. Justice Kagan later pointed out that the court rejected several similar arguments by the state of Alabama defending its discrimination. Louisiana argued that the court-mandated majority-minority districts giving minority voters an equal chance to elect the candidate of their choice puts the state in a position to discriminate against other voters. Justices Kavanaugh and Coney Barrett both voiced support for an endpoint to sunset such opportunity districts. The court's Jingles test, used to determine if a group qualifies for such a district, was also questioned by the conservative justices. In her opening argument, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund's Janae Nelson said that should the court strike down Section 2, it would be, quote, a staggering reversal of precedent that would throw maps across the country into chaos. There are 148 VRA majority-minority districts in 28 states, according to Ballotpedia. We've linked a transcript of the arguments at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
My name's John Driscoll, proud member of the Patriotic Millionaires. When I was CEO at CareCentrix, I doubled entry-level wages. The impact? Productivity went up, turnover went down, and the company was successful. When employees are off the clock, they're real consumers. The consumers that drive the economy with their spending. By paying employees a fair wage, we're actually helping out all of us in giving our economy the best chance to succeed. I'm John Driscoll. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am talking with Dr. Pat McBride. He's usually known as the former dean of the medical school at the University of Wisconsin, or a famous researcher, or a mentor. But today, he is the first bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers, and we're talking baseball, Brewers all the way, facing the Dodgers in the NLCS. And Pat's got some stories, especially stories about Bob Euchre.
You bet.
Yeah. So he was always that guy.
I'll tell you what, the Bob Euchre you heard on radio, saw on television, saw on Johnny Carson, that's what he was 24/7. I never saw him different. I spent a year working in the press box a summer, you know, and that's what he did to the guys up in the press box. In between innings, he'd pick on the reporters. I mean, you know, he'd be like, hey, where'd you get that tie? You know, there's some mustard on it, you know? I mean, he was always working these guys. And, you know, I have a couple of unbelievable stories. I remember I was 16, I was a bat boy, and I got, severe tonsillitis, and I had to have my tonsils taken out. And I was at St. Mary's Hospital in Milwaukee, and I've got their game on, and I'm listening. And all of a sudden, Bob Euchre goes, hey, I want to give a shout out to our bat boy, Pat McBride, who's in the hospital, and he's getting his tonsils taken out. We wish him well, and sure hope he doesn't bring the tonsils in a jar back to the stadium. I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm like, I can't believe it. You know, I mean, what kid gets a shout out from Bob Euchre? You know, I was freaking out. I'm in the hospital. I'm gonna be croaking because I can't. And then he says, you know, I know he likes to fish. So when he gets back, I'm going to take him out fishing. And I'm thinking, okay, this isn't going to happen, you know. But when I get back to the stadium, He goes, hey, I know, let's go out fishing. So he takes me out fishing in his boat with a couple of his friends. And we get this coho salmon. And I take it home. And I don't know, you know, I know how to fillet a fish. But I just like, fillet this coho. It's the best salmon I ever tasted in my life because it's a euchre salmon. But he was like that the whole time on the boat, telling stories and doing euchre things. That's just the way he is, you know. And another time, they always used to take every kid working on the team would get one road trip a year, every clubhouse guy. That was our reward for our hard work. And we were out in Los Angeles. I was over 20 by this time. And the players were great about taking us out and everything. And we were in a nightclub in Los Angeles with my friend Rick and we're with Yount and Gantner and Molitor and all these guys, and we're all standing around. And Euchre, of course, is telling stories. You know, every generation of Brewer players, you know, up to now, Yelich and all those guys, they love Pat Murphy. They all talk about Euchre, right? Mm-hmm. He did this for generations. So we're standing around, Euchre's telling stories, and all of a sudden he acts like somebody offended him, you know, and he goes, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm gone. And out he storms, you know, he storms out of this place. We're like, oh my God, what happened? Euchre never gets upset. So we say, should we go after him? What should we do? So the group, you know, starts heading toward the door, and we ask the doorman, where did Euchre go? Did you see a guy with silver hair going? Yeah, he said, yeah, he took off, you know. And, oh my God, you know, all of a sudden this taxi cab pulls away from the front of this nightclub. And there's Bob Euchre laying under it. And he jumps up and he goes, hey, I was just kidding you. I was there. So he had set the whole thing up. Just, boom, and we're back in. We're drinking beer. I'm like, oh, my God, this guy does this all the time. You know, like what, you know, Johnny Carson's most, you know, favorite guest. This is Euchre. And this is why, you know, he kept the team loose and he was always in there, you know. I mean, at 90s, and they're pouring champagne on people, you know. It's the Euchre magic. This is going to happen.
Euchre magic is like the McBride magic. It is Milwaukee born and raised and mm-hmm. invested and perpetuated. Mm-hmm. I mean, that love comes from the core.
Yeah. South Milwaukee, Cudahy, Pewaukee, Mequonago. You don't see that anywhere else. This is Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It's trust it.
Yes, it's so true. And, you know, the other night after they won the series and advanced, there were fireworks. They lit the Hone Bridge, gold and blue. It is the excitement, the enthusiasm. I'm up in Green Bay. And I mean, look what I'm wearing. You know, the same thing that you're wearing.
Trust it.
Trust it. There's so much excitement. And, you know, a friend of mine actually from Virginia who grew up a Pirates fan texted me this morning and said, we got to win this one for Euchre. And I said, how do you know Euchre? And he said, well, when my game would be over, I'd turn on your game because he was so entertaining to listen to.
Yeah. I had a former resident that was working with me, you know, and he came down to visit. He was the first resident that did research with me, you know, and he said, turn on the game, turn on, he's from Minnesota. He said, I got to listen to Euchre. I always turn on Euchre. So we turn on the game and we don't hear anything. It's just silent. But we hear a little noise from the crowd. You know how you always hear like
a little rumbling.
They just hear a little, and all of a sudden you hear Euchre, you know, going, you know, as I was saying, you know, and he begins to tell this three inning story, you know, where he tells a story and he's like, yeah, you know, and there was Mabel from Mequonago and I was telling her, and he goes, well, we'll be right back, you know, and then after the break, he comes back and he goes, you know, strike two. And then, you know, she went to the Hortonville bar where we were giving the tickets away and the story goes on and he's like, oh my God, this is like heaven.
This is why you can't just watch a game, because you need the Euchre filler, because that's the thing that keeps you entertained when the game is crawling.
The best, you know. But here's what's great. It's Wisconsin. You know, you don't get that kind of local flavor, the humility, the love of baseball, the truth, you know, about a guy that batted 200 and, you know, got a series ring. But here's what as an example, you know, look at Andrew Vaughn. Mm-hmm. The guy was on the trash heap. He was sent to the minors. He didn't have any confidence in himself, but our team saw something in him, you know, and they scouted him. They brought him up here, and he said, "It changed my life." That was his quote.
He changed the course of the Brewers. And I want to talk more about that, and I want to talk about your personal history and how the Brewers may have saved your life.
They did change my life.
They sure did. We're going to take a little break, but when we come back, more of that. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Midwest Farm Report with me, Pam Yonke.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubosky. Healthcare premiums are going way up, Democrat Hakeem Jeffries tells ABC's This Week, unless Congress reverses healthcare cuts enacted this past summer.
We're talking about the largest cut to Medicaid in American history. Hospitals, nursing homes, and community-based health centers are closing all across America because of what Republicans have done with their one big ugly bill.
That's the issue at the crux of the federal shutdown, which is now 3 weeks old. Democrats are withholding support for a short-term spending bill unless the health care issue is resolved. Republicans say they might discuss health care, but only after the government reopens. Hamas now says they've located the body of another Israeli hostage and are ready to transfer those remains once field conditions allow. And in France, authorities are now searching for a group of thieves who stole the country's crown jewels from the Louvre this morning. The robbers posed as construction workers and escaped on motorcycles, authorities say. This is ABC News.
The Badgers lose again. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, college football. The Wisconsin Badgers lost at home to Ohio State 34-0 for a second week in a row. The Badgers were shut out. Last week, they lost to Iowa 37-0. Now, the last time the Badgers lost in back-to-back shutouts was 1977. Head coach Luke Fickell asked about fans at Camp Randall Stadium chanting "Fire Fickell" again.
I know this, that it's disappointing to our kids, but it's also can be motivating as well. And that's what we got to continue to find is the ways to motivate us intrinsically that puts a better product out there so we don't have to worry about things like that.
Badgers linebacker Darrell Peterson on dealing with the loss.
Oh, you learn from it. I mean, we just played the number one team in the country tonight. We played some slouches. Played a great team. And they played great on offense and defense today. You got to learn from it, and you got to keep going.
NFL, it's the Packers and the Cardinals at State Farm Stadium in Arizona. The Packers looking for their first road win this season with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you're looking for a more efficient way to watch TV, this might be a deal for you. You can now bundle Apple TV with Peacock. Apple TV is already ad-free, but if you pair it with Peacock Premium Plus, which is Peacock's version of ad-free, it will cost you $19.99 a month. That's barely a savings from current prices, but if you go with the ad-supported Peacock, you can get both platforms for $14.99. Apple TV right now is currently $12.99, so that's not a bad deal, if you don't mind a few ads. It was pretty much a given Taylor Swift's new album, The Life of a Showgirl, was going to break records. According to Variety, Showgirl sold 4 million units in its first week. The old record was 3.5 million units for a week, which was previously held by Adele, according to Billboard. Swift also set a record, now having the most number one solo albums, breaking a tie she held with Jay-Z and Drake. She trails only the Beatles, who hold the record for all artists with 19 number one albums. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Increasing sunshine throughout the day, but breezy and much colder. Highs only in the upper 50s. For tonight, mostly clear and crisp. Areas of frost possible late, lows in the mid-30s. An isolated shower can't be ruled out Monday afternoon. Highs in the mid-60s. Currently, it's 55 degrees.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Paul Ciccone Berry and Sean Hannish back with another great Wisconsin sports film. No Packers, no life.
Sean came across No Packers, No Life at the Wisconsin Film Festival and said, you got to see it. We got to see if we can do something. This movie is just such a great opportunity to really see the impact of Wisconsin culture halfway around the world in Japan. It is just so magical and joyful. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to come take a look.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app. Matt and Air on Air.
Hi, it's Jane Matmayer.
Hi, it's Greg Bach.
I'm Calvin.
Join us weekdays 9 to 11 across the Civic Media Radio Network for Matt and Air on Air.
We cover all the news that directly affects us as Wisconsinites.
And we lighten things up in hour number two with a segment called Audio Sorbet, and this shouldn't be a thing. We hope you can join us.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time after a very disconcerting and busy news and sports weekend. We will sit down and discuss it all with our friend and colleague of Matt Nair on Air, Jane Matt Nair. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I am here with Dr. Pat McBride. He is the former dean of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, dean of students. That's how I know him. But today we're really focusing on the Milwaukee Brewers and his history as the first bat boy. And if you missed any of our conversation, Euchre stories, what was it like when the Brewers came to Milwaukee, you can catch all of that wherever you get your podcasts, and you can watch the video version on my YouTube channel at Dr. Kristen Lierley. Oh, and Pat, pitch your book, because your book is just loaded with these stories.
Sure. I wrote a book called The Luckiest Boy in the World, because I am. There's no question about it in a million different ways. But as a kid that I grew up in Wauwatosa and could ride my bike to the stadium, which actually I'm going to do that tomorrow. I'm going to ride my bike with the mayor of Wauwatosa.
With the mayor of Wauwatosa, who happens to be
my twin brother, co-author of the book. Uh-huh. And he's got a book of his own called City on the Edge, he just published. But anyway, we used to go to games together, and he was an outstanding pitcher, pitched in college at UW-Milwaukee, and we loved baseball. So, I was a kid that struggled like a lot of teenagers, and getting that job changed my life because, the players, but more importantly, the staff that worked there, the clubhouse guys, the clubhouse guys that I worked with were two seminarians who became priests, who actually married my wife and I, these two seminarians, and a guy named Big Jim Kaczynski, who...
That is such a Wisconsin name.
Oh, my God. Jim Kaczynski, who ran the clubhouse, the visiting clubhouse, for 39 years. He wrote a book called Sox and Jocks, which was very interesting, telling all the stories. And, he met every visiting guy for every team for 39 years. Imagine that. Reggie Jackson, Cal Ripken. We worked the 1975 All-Star game. Henry Kissinger came through that locker room. We Howard Cosell, you name it. I met presidents and governors and mayors, and it was remarkable. But what I learned in 5 minutes in a locker room was I was ready to meet the stars. I was ready to meet Henry Aaron and Willie Mays and Carl Yastrzemski and Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, and all my heroes, right? And what I found out, it wasn't about their stats, and it wasn't about who was a star, because some of the stars were not pleasant people at all. They were not kind to us. They made our life really miserable in the locker room. They'd come and tear the place apart, or they'd drop their laundry on the floor next to the laundry basket, or
just rude.
Just be cruel to us, really. But there were also players that were incredibly kind and incredibly nice to us. Players like Yount and Henry Aaron and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bob Dandridge and John McLaughlin and Bart Starr and Reid Nitschke, to be honest with you. Incredibly kind to us
We should remind our listeners that you not only were the first bat boy for the Brewers, but you were also
ball boy for the Bucks, and then the first equipment manager and the youngest equipment manager in professional sports history for the Bucks. And I was working on the sidelines for the Packer games, the ones played in Milwaukee. And three sport trifecta for Wisconsin. It was insane.
I just can't even believe that. Like when I was reading your book, yeah. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. There's no way that a kid could do all of these things. But yes, it was you.
Yeah. But, you know, it was also pretty amazing because in those days, those teams ignored the child labor law. So I started at would start at 2 p.m. and get home at about 12:30 or midnight. And then to unpack those teams, we'd have to come back a lot of times at about 3 or 4 a.m. I worked till 5 or 6 and unpacking. And then I'd get back on my bike or in my motorcycle or my car and then drive home and get a couple hours sleep and go to school. And it was, you know, I'd have to pack my homework in there somewhere. And but what was fascinating was like Jim Kaczynski or the trainer for the Bucks, my mentor, Arne Garber. I was struggling in school at the time, and they saw something I didn't see in myself, and they saw that I had a brain, and I didn't know it because I was called the dumb twin by teachers at school. And they said, you know, we expect that you are going to do well in school. So here's the deal. You can only work this job if you get a 3.6 or greater. Both of them said that to me.
Wow.
And they said, we want to see your report card every semester. And I was the only kid that they made do that. There were a lot of other kids working there, you know, other ball boys and bat boys. And so I'd have to bring in my report card. And I'm thinking, well, this is a little unfair. But it made me work hard. And I ended up averaging well over a 3.6. And then I remember I said to the trainer of the Bucks, well, you know, I'm really hoping that I can become an athletic trainer. So I want to learn to tape and stuff. And he said, no, I'm not going to have you do that. And I said, well, what do you mean? I mean, I thought, okay, great. I'm not going to be smart enough to be a trainer. And he said, you're going to medical school. And I was like, my jaw hit the floor. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And he said, no, you're going to follow the doctors around. You're going to shadow them. And I did. And I ended up helping take out the gallbladder of one of the trainers.
Oh, jeez.
And which was pretty remarkable. That trainer that I took the gallbladder out, Tony Spino, was a former Dodger bat boy.
Really?
And he just called me and he said, you know what'd be really cool? Let's try to get to a game together where there's a former Dodger bat boy and a former Brewer bat boy. And he said, that'd be quite a picture and a story.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and because we both, you know, worked closely together. I was his assistant trainer. And so I decided to go to medical school. I really, you know, the fire got lit.
They saw something in you that you didn't see in yourself because you had heard other messages and you didn't have this great uplifting home life. You had parents who were very successful and who did incredible things, but you had a pretty dysfunctional home.
Yeah. Like a lot of kids that grew up everywhere, but especially in Milwaukee, you know, the home that made the beer that made Milwaukee famous. There were a lot of cases of beer delivered in my house, you know, almost every day. And my parents were quite severe alcoholics and fought constantly. And house was extremely chaotic and loud. And I didn't want to be there. So having these jobs where I could escape and get out of the house were an unbelievable blessing. And then having these mentors, who would expect that I would find mentors in a locker room? It was incredible. And I would look up to players that were really incredible role models. And I'm going to tell you that, for example, Henry Aaron, I'm wearing his jersey right now.
Like, you know, his actual jersey.
His actual jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He became vice president of the Braves. You know, I mean, this guy was so quiet and humble, but that's who I admired, you know, was somebody that didn't make a show of himself. He was an incredible person. And Kareem was, you know, people didn't understand him. He was very shy and introverted because he was 7'3", you know. I mean, he was always sticking out, you know. He could get no quiet space outside the locker room. Inside the locker room, he was a genius that played chess with Lucius Allen, his friend, and talked about jazz. And guy ended up has written, I think, 29 books now, you know, and he's got one of the best podcasts and Substacks, you know. He's an incredible person. I still get to see him when he comes to Milwaukee, and he's brilliant. And so he was a guy I really looked up to, and same with Oscar Robertson, who runs 5 different businesses. I mean, I had really great role models when inside that locker room.
Isn't it interesting how you can come from this really dysfunctional, challenging family life and find your mentors in a different place and then recognize it and do the same thing with your professional life? Because that is what you have done with so many doctors and so many people who are serving the people of Wisconsin and far beyond.
Yeah, I still do it every day. I'm meeting with, met with a student earlier today, and I'm meeting with, you know, pre-med, pre-nursing and pre-pharmacy students trying to help them, pre-PA, you know, do the right thing to find their path and, you know, on their journey to get into school, because somebody did that for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of somebody doing something for somebody, I don't know if I ever shared this personal story, and it's not nearly what your story is, but I also lost a parent to alcoholism, my dad, when I was in the sixth grade, and it just happened to be 1981, right before the Brewers were amazing. And for some reason, I got fixated on the 1982 Brewers, maybe just because they were in the news all the time or whatever it was, but this like 11-year-old girl loved them, knew what the lineup was, knew what the buzz was. This is before the internet, right? So I was paying attention. And as they were making their way through the playoffs and doing this incredible stuff and making us believe, because none of the wins at the end of the season were easy for them. They had to fight for every little bit of it. And that, yeah, for some reason, just really buoyed my spirits. And I still, when I watch that documentary, Just a Bit Outside, and you mentioned it earlier, it's on Amazon right now. If y'all haven't seen it, it's an amazing documentary by itself. But if you are a Brewers fan, you need to see it. Watching it, there were so many moments where I had tears in my eyes, just thinking about Gorman Thomas and seeing Cecil Cooper and Ben Ogilvie. And, you know, Paul Molitor was my favorite. They did so much for me just by being themselves and just by winning and just by watching what the rest of the community was doing when they were winning. It really felt like it just pulled us all together.
Yeah. You know, Milwaukee is so fortunate to have the size of the community that it is to have teams, professional sports teams like this. I mean, Green Bay, Wisconsin, the community owns the team.
Yeah.
It's insane. Look what we have.
It's so insane.
So when you watch that movie, we lost a few people like Don Sutton. Mm. And Don Sutton was a wonderful person, just a class act. And you could see it in the documentary about how he helped pull that team together. And Raleigh Fingers was a character, but a good guy. Don Simmons. Ted Simmons, excuse me.
So
Simmons,
brilliant.
Talk about brilliant. And mm-hmm. Now tell you what, William Contreras,
yeah,
is the glue. Like when you watch
the catcher,
our catcher. I mean, this guy, to be a catcher is the hardest position in baseball by far. And I mean, pitching's not easy, but a catcher. So when the Miz, you know, Mizorowski was struggling in one of those games, he was thrown wild and he was thrown 104 and thrown it all over. You could watch him push his mitt down and just say, calm down, and then pull it toward him saying, you know, just pull it to me and do all this stuff and calm him down and go out to the mound and talk to these guys. I mean, he's brilliant. He's experienced. It's really important. So Ted Simmons was the same thing in 82. He talks in that movie. You can tell. It's fantastic to watch this whole thing to come together, you know. And these are a bunch of young guys. And I'll tell you what, I was on the bench for the 71 Bucks championship, and I watched it. And when Oscar Robertson showed up, it's like a Contreras on the field. He was the coach on the floor, and there's one magic ingredient that you need to win a championship. Obviously you have to have talent, but you need a coach on the field and you need to be hungry. That was what I learned. If you're really hungry, it's magic.
And so
they're really hungry.
I'm hungry too. Yeah. I'm hungry, and I want to get back to that after we take this short break. Friends, I am here with Dr. Pat McBride. We are talking about the Milwaukee Brewers, and nobody knows it better than him because he was the first bat boy for the Brewers back in 1969. So come on back for the rest of our...
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Did the average S&P 500 CEOs earn in less than 2 days what their typical worker earned in all of 2023? Yes. In 2023, the average S&P 500 CEO earned about $17 million, or about $46,849 per day, compared to under $64,000 per year for the average worker. Median figures were similar. CEOs made $16.3 million, while median workers earned about $81,000, equivalent to less than 2 days of CEO pay. High CEO compensation remains a stark contrast to the modest worker earnings across major U.S. companies. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Federal budget cuts mean bad news for Wisconsin's trout populations. That's because the budget slashes funding for the USGS Ecosystem Mission Area. It's the primary program that works to control invasive sea lampreys. The parasitic fish have caused billions of dollars in damage to Great Lakes fisheries, but that trend had been reversing in recent years thanks to work and research that is now being dismantled. Leaves are falling, and now's a great time to rake them up, put them in bags, and have them trucked off to the landfill. Actually, that's not so great for the environment. Turns out fallen leaves are where pollinators like to spend the winter, and they can also help fertilize your lawn. UW Extension experts say most of the time, it's best just to leave the leaves where they fall. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you've ever found yourself driving down a quiet back road and thought, this feels special, you might be on one of our state's rustic roads.
The program was created by the legislature back in 1973. It's really a unique local-state partnership.
Officials wanted people by car, bike, motorcycle, or even on foot to enjoy the natural beauty. The first rustic road designated in Taylor County 50 years ago this month.
There's 124 roads that have been designated rustic roads in Wisconsin in 62 different counties, and it spans over 784 miles.
Each rustic road is unique, rolling past farmland through forests or covering rugged terrain. And the speed limit tops out at 45 miles an hour, sometimes even slower. It's not about getting anywhere fast. This slice of Wisconsin reveals sometimes the best part of the journey is the road itself. I'm Terry Baugh.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm talking with Dr. Pat McBride. He is a physician, a leader, a researcher, but also the first bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he's telling us stories, stories about Bob Uecker, stories about the city of Milwaukee. He's a Tosa native, and stories about the people of Wisconsin and why sports means so much to us. And when we left off in the last segment, he was saying, Milwaukee is hungry. We're hungry. Are you hungry?
Here's the question. Was the goal to beat the Cubs or to win it all? And that's sometimes, you know, the goals, we've got to make the playoffs, you know. But this is different this year because they didn't want to make the playoffs. They needed to get past this first round, right? And they've done it. So they believe their goal is to win the World Series. They know it because we've been to the mountaintop, but we didn't get to the right?
We've been to the mountaintop so many times.
Right?
Yes.
So you grew up and you saw 82 and your heart was broken.
I cried so hard when Gorman Thomas was just fouling because he didn't want to be the last guy. Yes.
And you know, the point of 82, the movie about 82 was these guys are now, you know, they're my age and they're saying, oh my God, if I woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
And that's what Uecker always used to say, woulda, coulda, shoulda. And they're saying, I'm not doing it. Mm-mm. We're going to win this thing. So it's extraordinarily hard to win a championship. It takes everything. And, you know, to see Bryce Terang break out and to see Andrew Vaughn doing what he's doing when he was in AAA at the beginning of the year. And there's pitchers that, like Chad Patrick that was in the International League. and minors at the beginning of the year. I am telling you what, they are playing on house money, and they are hungry. They want to win the whole thing. They know they've beaten the Dodgers 6-0 this year. They know they can do it.
They know they can.
So sure, it's the big, you know, it's a big game and they're on national TV and all that. If they can get past that, this is the question. But when I was sitting on the Bucks bench and they won that 71 championship, they were the youngest team to ever win the whole thing. It was the third year of the Bucks. Kareem was, you know, a second year player. Bob Dandridge was a second year player. Greg Smith was a second year player. So I don't care, man. If you're hungry enough and you've got some senior leadership like Yelich, Contreras, Freddie Peralta, Pat Murphy's steady at the helm, man. I'm telling you what, the Brewers can do this, you know, if they remain hungry and keep the goal on, we're not settling for anything but the World Series. If they say, well, we just did what we needed to do. We got over this first hump. You know, we beat the Cubs and now we're in the National League. That's not it. You know, if they
I agree with you.
Yeah. We haven't won a World Series.
They just seem, watching Christian Yelich before the last game, he was so focused. It was almost like he couldn't get through the interview because he just wanted to get to the game. And yeah. You could see Contreras had this like determined look in his eye, seeing him out there on the mound, talking to Uribe, getting him to settle down a little bit so that he could finish out the game. I mean, these guys want it. I bought pocket pancakes today at Costco. I'm going to carry them around with me everywhere I go.
I'm folding pizza and putting it in my pants.
But you are biking to the game tomorrow with your brother to get a brat. And what's your plan?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to be hoarse.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be cheering. I'm more of a student of the game because one of the best things that happened to me about baseball, you know, people can say, oh, baseball's slow and it's boring. It's not, you know, because it's so strategic, you know, like when you are listening to the broadcast or you're watching it, you know, what is this guy going to throw to this guy, you know, because he's a fastball hitter. He can't hit a slider. It's a cutter. This guy's got a four seam fastball. He's got a knuckle curve, you know, or he's going to hit to the opposite field or, you know, it's all strategic. It's an unbelievable game. It's one of the greatest games that's ever been created. You know, where are they playing this guy? You know, all of a sudden this guy hits this line drive that should be a hit, but oh, the guy was playing in exactly the right position.
So
it's so exciting.
If you're being so strategic, can you get sucked into all the excitement? Because I don't get the strategery, but I definitely get the enthusiasm. Oh. And I know, and you know, that the Brewers and the Packers and the Bucks, sports means so much to so many of us here, not just in Wisconsin, but other people who are listening and watching. I mean, I was in Boston last week, and when I told people I was from Wisconsin, they were joking around. You're a cheesehead. I bet you like the Green Bay Packers. They're great. There is something about Wisconsin that's really about our sports that really sets us apart.
Well, it draws people together, you know, it's part of community, you know, like you could say it's sports and athletes are overpaid and all of this, but you know what, it brings us together. You know, there's nothing like a Packer game and everybody comes together and it's joyful, you know, with all the other craziness we have going on right now. You know, this is one thing that unifies us, and we have this community. You know, we know what it's like when we don't have it, when we lost baseball. And we know what the Brewers mean to everybody. And everybody in that crowd is not any kind of political party or division or race. It doesn't matter. We all love this team and we all are rooting together for one common purpose. And that's what it's all about. It's about love, you know, and it's a small market. It's the smallest market in baseball. Go Brew Crew.
Are we going all the way this year?
I believe it.
I do too.
Euchre Magic.
Euchre Magic.
No, we have. No, I'm going to be serious for a minute. We have pitching.
Uh-huh.
It's been fantastic. We have. We're playing it the right way. People said we can't hit home runs. Guess what?
Huh? I saw three solos the other night. I'm just saying.
Just saying. I mean, I think we can do this. I really do think we can do it.
I do too. I think it comes from the spirit of the community. I think it comes from the players. They're hungry. I think it's all of us. Pat,
we have home field advantage.
We do. Yes, we do. I am so grateful to you for hanging out with me today, of course, but for everything that you do in your sports life and especially your real life. just thank you for being an amazing human being. Well,
thank you for doing what you do. You are really the pride of our community up in Green Bay. So bless you.
Team effort, my friend.
Yes.
Dr. Pat McBride, physician, former dean, researcher, but most importantly, the first bat boy for our Milwaukee Brewers. Friends, if you missed any part of our conversation, you can always find it on civicmedia.us and wherever you get your podcasts, and on my YouTube channel at Dr. Kristen Lyerly. And as always, we love your thoughts. So find me on any of the socials, send me a message, and let me know what you want to talk about. Many thanks to Abraham Lyerly, our producer, and Nick Tierman, who wrote the theme song for our show. And until next week, you're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. 19 days into the government shutdown, and the economic impact is intensifying for federal workers.
We're cutting Democrat programs that we didn't want.
More than 750,000 federal workers furloughed, more than 4,000 fired. But the White House says some, including military troops, FBI agents, and DHS officers, will get paid.
ABC's Selena Wang. Democrats have been holding out, pushing for a reversal to cuts in Medicaid earlier this year. Republicans say they might be willing to negotiate on health care, but they've got to open the government first. Israel and Hamas are now accusing each other of violating the ceasefire brokered by the U.S., with Israel confirming it struck multiple targets inside Gaza today. And a nationwide manhunt is underway in France for four suspects who robbed the Louvre this morning, getting away with the crown jewels of France. This is ABC News.